This episode of the Screen Addicts Podcast is brought to you by Crazy Famous, the new award-winning indie comedy from writer-producer Bob Farkas and director Paul Jarrett.
Crazy Famous is about Bob, a fame-obsessed average Joe who escapes a mental institution with a band of misfits for one last desperate attempt to be famous, starring Gregory Leigh, Richard Short, Catherine Curtin, and Ajay Naidu.
Crazy Famous is now available for pre-order on iTunes and will be available on video on demand January 9th. How far would you go to be famous?
All right, now turn the TV back on.
Recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Fire up the projectors, turn on your TVs, and adjust your antennas. It's time for the Screen Addicts Podcast with your hosts, Chris, Steven, and Jeremy.
And welcome once again to the Screen Addicts Podcast. And as always, I am one of your hosts, the Warden, Chris Villegas.
I am Steven Slammer Sosa.
I am Jeremy. Don't drop the soap.
He's the soap dropper.
Would you pick that up for me, lover?
Yeah.
You know, guys, being the first show of 2018, you know, we know there's a lot of podcasts doing top 10 top favorites of 2017. We're still kind of refining our list. So before we get there, we wanted to bring you our prison episode, all inspired by our indie flick fix this week, which was picked by Jeremy this week. And you know, I'm always sketched out about when Jeremy picks movies because, you know, there's a Jeremy Gore score for a reason. And, man, but I have to say, Jeremy, I think you kind of hit a home run with this one, buddy.
And I got to say, this one was mainly recommended by Steven.
He gives you all the credit and then...
I know. He's the one that told me to pick this one, so...
And the man behind the curtain is the real Oz.
Yeah.
Man, just say yes and thank you.
Right.
I know, but still.
You know, we are breaking ground. And this is breaking ground because this is technically the very first film on Indie Flick Fix that has a positive rating with both critics, fans, and all three of us.
I know.
Yeah, true. Very true. But the film, our Indie Flick Fix this week is... The Brawl in Cell Block 99. And, man, we'll get into it. Of course, spoiler free. I know it's going to be hard for you guys, but we can do it. But, as always, before we get into everything, we will head down our recently watched segment. And, Jeremy, take it away, man.
Let's see here. I didn't really watch much, but I did catch that new Dave Chappelle stand-up on Netflix, Equanimity. It's really funny. And, yeah. And besides all the college football games that were on, all the bowl games and the college football playoffs, that pretty much dominated my weekend and everything, so...
Yeah.
You jock!
Man, I tell you what, though, that OU...
Oh, dude.
Georgia game?
That was insane.
That's one for the books, man.
But then in the end, it's going to be Roll Tide.
Yeah, I don't see Georgia beating them. Although,
no.
You know, it is going to be basically a home game for Georgia.
Yeah.
I mean, that may sway a little bit, but...
pretty much the entire town of Tuscaloosa, Alabama is going to empty and head to Atlanta. So
the whole state will be there, man.
Yeah, the entire state pretty much is going to be there. So
that's all they have is college football.
Yeah.
That's all Steven gets to hear about is that Tide.
Oh, God. If it's not Seminoles, FSU, or Roll Tide, man, I'm sick of it. That's the only reason I want them to lose. Like, just shut up.
You're just saying that because your Longhorns have been sucking it up.
Oh, my God. That's a dumpster fire if I've ever seen one.
The Longhorns have been irrelevant for years. So. Yeah.
Ever since Colt McCoy quit at the championship game, we haven't done shit.
I'm not even getting into it. Technically, it was before that. VY was the last great one. Colt McCoy was trash.
No, I mean, he was good at long in Texas, and that's what I'm saying is, like, we got to the national championship game with his squad. You know, I'm not saying he was like Vince Young or anything, but that was the last time that the University of Texas had a great team. And then, oh, I'm going to save myself for the pros, so I'm going to sit this one out, even though he could have played. Daddy went back there and said, no, I'm not getting into it.
And what's he turned into? A career backup.
Exactly.
All right, so that's all you got, man?
That's all I got.
Cool. All right, let's see. I continued down my road at the ranch on Netflix, and that's getting old really quick. And I'm about ready to give that up, but not give it up, but I'm almost caught up with the current season, so there's that. I did watch last night. I got home from work, and you know, my wife and kids are off for Christmas break this week, and when I got home they were watching it just blinked.
It must have been great.
Ding!
I think that bowl burned out.
Jeez. The Last Night.
Oh, okay. With Richard Gere?
Yes.
No wonder you couldn't remember that.
Jeez, man. And I was like...
Or Transformers The Last Night.
No.
Okay.
That's what took me by surprise. That, like, the boys were sitting here watching it. And I'm like, this is like an old, long, boring movie.
I can't hate on The Last kids. Night. Well, yeah, kids. Definitely for kids. I was about to say, it's not really the worst movie.
No.
If I could,
for
you
kids,
know.
Kids, it's bad.
Oh, yeah, I don't see what they would be. Yeah, I see what you mean.
So, well, and then when I got home, so I just sat and finished and watched that. And also, me and the wife got around to seeing this weekend Three Billboards. And, man, let me tell you that, you know, when we finally do our top list for 2017, I'm going to have to say that's going to be up there.
Oh, yeah. I think that's going to hit the tops for most of ours.
Man, it was just so good. And, you know, after the movie was over, me and my wife were talking and just, you know, we were just like, how great is Woody Harrelson as an actor in general? I mean, not just in that movie, but the way he can play almost any damn role and play it the best ever. Like, he's just so damn good. That movie was so damn good.
Oh, yeah. And that role in that, compared to his role in War for the Apes, it was a polar opposite.
Mm-hmm. Which is a polar opposite from Woody and Cheers.
And, you know, that movie's so good. I mean, we'll probably be doing a review on that sometime soon. Mm-hmm. Also, what else did I get around? Oh, I watched Detroit.
Ooh,
yeah.
Detroit You know, once it picked up a little bit, then it got a lot better to me. It was just so slow moving in the beginning to me and to my wife. Like, she was all like, oh, God, can I get out of this hotel already? And I'm like, that's the whole point of the movie.
That is the movie.
Isn't it 2.5 hours long?
Yeah, it's pretty long. Close,
right? Yeah. So... I think that's about all I have this week, though. So I got some pretty good flicks in this week. Steven, what do you got?
Well, Happy New Year to you two gentlemen. First thing and foremost. New Year, Steve. Anyway.
After you're done with your list here, I got a couple questions for y'all about the New Year stuff. So we'll go ahead.
Sounds good. I, too, and it's a really good thing that we are holding off our best of list, because much like you two gentlemen, we are in the precarious situation of not being able to obtain all of the proper films at our cinemas to go see. So we tend to have to wait around a little bit longer than most mainstream audiences get to, because we're not in a lot of the outlets that get some of the award-nominated films.
Oh, dude, just say it. We're in Podunkville, USA. That doesn't get good movies.
Well, I didn't want to say it. Yeah, so, you know, we have to kind of wait and by other means necessary, I suppose. But I did get to see a couple of really good movies this last week, and I'm finally on the final season of The Five, gentlemen. It's coming to an end.
Oh, my. Again.
Yeah, again. Only 26 episodes to go.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was like, oh, my God. I can't even claim a somewhat victorious lap of saying that I'm on the last season, considering this is, like, three regular television series seasons wrapped in one, but I'll get there eventually. And
you could always just watch the premiere and then watch the finale and then you're done.
Wow, man. That is just sacrilegious, bro.
That's no. Like not eating the middle of an Oreo. What the hell is wrong with you?
Jeremy, you're a sick bastard. Okay,
watch the very middle episode. There you go. And then watch the finale.
The middle episode. That makes so much sense. Anyway, oh man, I also heard that the X-Files is potentially, this is going to be the last season that they ever do, so I guess I'll just wait till this thing's done and continue on with that, because I'm not even close to the end anyway, but...
What season will this be when they do it?
It's technically 11, season 11, because they had 9 original seasons air. And then they came back to do that special 6-episode series event, which counts as season 10. And then
really?
This one's another, yeah, and then this one's another 6 or 7, so then it's 11. It's really weird.
It's like this new season of Roseanne that's about to start. Yes. It's only 9 episodes.
That's okay. And they're bringing back Dan from the dead, and excited.
That's 9 too many.
And I read how they're going to do it. They're pretty much just ignoring that whole final episode of Roseanne, God. And he's just there.
Why not? But what I did watch is I got the written and directed by Greta Gerwig, 100% greatest critical reviewed movie in history, Lady Bird. And now it's a really good movie. But that kind of hype is, you're expecting some kind of revelation of cinema, which it's not. It's a good coming of age story. Yeah. Like,
I was about to say, what's that movie even about?
It's just about this high school senior who goes to this Catholic school, and she lives in Sacramento, California, and she just wants to move away from her family to the East Coast, and her name's Lady Bird, but it's kind of a self-given nickname. Her real name's Christine, and you know, it's just kind of her trials and tribulations, if you will.
Oh,
and
so it's your coming of age boyhood story for this year.
Yeah, I mean, okay. It's a little bit more, because it's rated R, so they go into a little bit more graphic detail of how certain things transpire for a young woman of her age and the relationship with her mother, played by Laurie Metcalf, who's Jackie in that stupid show, Roseanne.
Y'all quit hating on Roseanne.
I like Roseanne, dog.
I know you do. I know both of you do. But it was really good. It is a really, really good movie. I mean, like I said, nothing the best I've ever seen, but it was good. I also watched the Netflix original produced film Mudbound, starring yes. Gary Hedlund, Jason Clarke, Jason Mitchell, Carey Mulligan, Mary J. Blige, and it was good, man. It was really, really good movie. And anytime I watch a movie like that, dude, I'm always just incensed. I'm just so infuriated. Just the lack of human, you know, just like the lack of human empathy. Like just the way that they treat the slaves and the colored people. It's just all the black community in those movies. It's just like, oh my god, how could you have? I mean, I just can't imagine. Just the lack of human decency at that time period is just, I'm glad we can think of it that way because it's just terrible. I hate watching movies like 12 Years a Slave. I was so pissed. You know, it's just like, God, this is infuriating. But it was a really good movie. And
we need to talk about that one more in depth.
Yeah, we could get into that one down quite the road a bit.
Because,
yeah,
man, there's just so much in that movie. It is so good. If you haven't watched it, y'all need to watch.
Absolutely. And, you know, from a technical sense, it's great. From an acting perspective, it's great. It's just a really, really good movie. I also watched, like you, Chris, The Three Billboards of Ebbing, Missouri. And I was excited because it's Martin McDonagh, who was the writer and director of In Bruges, one of my all-time favorite movies. Uh-huh. And I wasn't really kind of, you know, as excited, like, because when he did that movie Seven Psychopaths a couple of years ago, it just wasn't that great. It was okay. It had Christopher Walken, Sam Rockwell, and I don't know, man. As a follow-up to In Bruges, it was pretty bad. It just did not even come close to hitting the mark, and I kind of hoped it was just a sophomore slump for old McDonagh, because I hated to believe that he wasn't capable of making another great movie. And then I watched Three Billboards of Ebbing, Missouri, and I'm like, okay, this is more In Bruges. This is better. Everything was better. Everything was just, the story was captivating. The acting performances were great from everyone involved. There wasn't one individual in that movie that was lacking. And I love seeing Frances McDormand in that strong female role. I haven't seen her play that in a really long time. And I thought, only a Coen brother was capable of writing a role for her like that.
I was about to say Fargo.
Yeah, but that was over 21 years ago, man.
I know.
It's been a really long time. And, you know, she's had other roles here and there, like Burn After Reading and Almost Famous, stuff like that, where she's not really that take charge character. Man, her role in this, Mildred, holy
shit. She took charge and all sorts of shit.
Large margin charge, bro. It was just like, holy cow. But it was a fantastic movie, which I'm sure we will get into a little bit later on. And finally, I did watch a big budgeted film at the theaters, and I went to the jungle of Jumanji. Man, Of course I did. It was great. I loved it. It was really, really good. And if you're a fan of the original Jumanji, you're going to love this, because this is a direct sequel. No matter what it looks like in the theaters and or in the previews and this and that, it is a direct sequel. And I love when they do that. I love when it's a continuation of the original story and not just some flat-out remake of the movie, which they very well could have done, you know, because they tried to do that shit with Zathura, where it was basically like, hey, let's just remake Jumanji, but in outer space. And it's just kind of like, well, is this some kind of... And I remember when Zathura came out, even when I watched it, I was in college, and I thought, well, does this have some kind of tie-in to Jumanji, or what is it, what is the thing here? Like, is there some kind of association to these particular game boards have some linked powers towards one another? But no, there was no connectivity to Jumanji whatsoever. It was its own thing.
Connected to Twilight.
Oh my god. But, you know, I just didn't, I didn't understand, like, I guess it was just a remake, or maybe there was another book, like, I think that is what it is. It's another short story book or something, but Welcome to the Jungle was just, it was great. And I love seeing, you know, Jack Black doing something funny. That guy hasn't done anything funny, and I can't even remember how long. Gulliver's Travels pretty much buried that dude's comedic career. And although I did love Bernie, which came out a couple of years ago, it's not really kind of madcap Jack Black, you know?
Yeah.
And this was from the director of Orange County, too. So I thought, oh my gosh, what a great reunion. There's another really cool like cameo that ties into Orange County, too. But I was like, man, that's that makes sense that Jake Kasdan is the type of director that could bring out the comedic best in Jack Black, no matter how old he is. And I don't know, I just, I really enjoyed it. The Rock was great. The Rock played a role unlike himself. He wasn't the Rock, basically. He was more like a feeble pebble, if you will. And that's what's so funny about it. And I don't know. And then Karen Gillan, who played Nebula in the Avengers and Doctor Who, she's great too. And it's funny seeing her in a role where she's not covered in all that blue shit. but yeah, overall, I really enjoyed it. And
so I guess you didn't like Kevin Hart that much.
I did like Kevin Hart, but
you
it's
mentioned everybody.
Everybody but Kevin Hart. But it's Kevin Hart. He does one thing and he does it well, and it's funny. So you know, not much to talk about.
Kevin Hart can be Kevin Hart, and when he has to restrict himself, he's not as funny as
when he's in some dramatic turning role. Then I'll probably speak more about it. But until then, he's just Kevin Hart being Kevin Hart. But overall, it was a really good movie. I'm glad that it's being rewarded financially too, because it's a big hit at the box office. So I'm glad people are actually taking the time to say, hey, this actually is a good movie, and it's not treading on the namesake Jumanji, you know. But other than that, you know, that's it.
It took down Star Wars for one day.
It did. I saw that. It made like $1 million. I was like, the jungle lives.
And then the next day happened.
Yeah, and then it's back to business. But yeah, that's all I had. That's all I watched this last week.
Cool. Man, you were busy.
Yeah. And that's just all the stuff that I can think of. Like, I can't even... I'm pretty sure there was more stuff. I know there... Oh, we did watch Mother again, because Sonny didn't finish the first time. Man, going down that well of hell was so much fun the second time.
I bet.
She hated it, too. She was like...
Why?
She just... I mean, I think when we had a discussion, we had a long discussion after it was over, and I think after we talked, it kind of... Some perspectives were altered, and she kind of looked at things differently, and it kind of made a little bit more sense. But she was like, what the hell was that? That didn't make any sense. And she's like, well, I'm like, well, yeah, I did some research on it. It kind of does after the fact. She's like, yeah, until you understand what the intentions of Aronofsky was, then before that, you don't know what the hell's going on.
No, you go into it cold, and you're just, you're in for a ride.
But I told her, I was like, that's what I loved about it. It was just this such an unpredictable freak show, man. I just did not, you know, and like, I don't know. But it was kind of funny. Her reaction was pretty good.
That's kind of how I was at first when I first watched it, because I read just a very little bit about it, and I went into it pretty much stone cold and watched it and was like, oh my god, what the hell is going on?
You're like, am I high? What is this?
It's but like, other than what kind of acid did I just take? Oh, shit.
Not that we condone that type of behavior, Jeremy.
That's right. No taking of the acid, Jeremy. Anyway, all right. So, before we move on to headlines, I know it's been a while since we've done some headlines, but, you know, it is the new year. It is 2018, and 2017, you know, was really pretty good to the Screen Addicts podcast. But I wanted to ask you fellas, you know, this little old cliche question at the new year. But I'm going to kind of put a little bit of spin on it. What do you see kind of a resolution for us in 2018?
Global domination.
Globo gym? I don't know. I don't want to go to the gym.
Average Joe's. I mean, I personally like how the growth of the podcast, like the fan base is getting larger, and that's always a good thing too. You can never have too many people listening and too many people chiming in, and it's just you know, it's just a great feeling that the sponsorships are starting to come in. You know, just great things like that. It's just always good for that type of aspect to not only continue, but to flourish even more. And I feel like that's going to happen a lot more this year for us.
I think so, too. And, you know, we've met some really awesome friends this past year, too, in the podcasting world. I mean, we've had some guests on, from Hannah, from Film Roast, the couple from...
Brock
from You Can
Kern the Nerd, and
yeah,
and you know, we got Josh from the Stale Popcorn Podcast. I mean, just a lot of great people who contributed.
Lolo, not to mention Mikey Films and Big J.
Yeah, Mikey just came in. Mikey, Lolo, I mean, just that would be good too. I think a lot more collaboration will be definitely happening this year, because I know it gets into that sticky territory where people still like to kind of maintain hold of their own show as their own voice, but then it's like, what's that old saying, you know, it's collaboration leads to more creativity, you know, and I think that is also something that's good, because we talk to each other all the time, but it's always good when a fourth party comes in and has a completely different perspective of things, of us, and it just, I don't know, it allows some takes.
I need to start pimping y'all out more, getting y'all on some shows.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was like the one thing that I had done was the movie trivia game, or the movie game with Peter, Paul Nostalgic. You know, that was pretty fun, man. I like doing stuff like that.
So... But, you know, just I just wanted to bust in real quick. I know we kind of went in real fast, but, you know, that's how we do. That's how we do. But it was a great 2017. Looking forward to more and more in 2018. I was telling these guys earlier today, we are creeping in on episode 100. And, man, I honestly didn't think we'd last 50.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
But I feel like we still have a lot to talk about, and we are just going to keep trucking. And like I said, until Steven leaves us for the big time.
Can't wait.
Anyway, so pushing on now. Headlines. Steven... We haven't done headlines in a minute, so go ahead, my man.
Thank you, Chris, and I kind of feel like since we haven't done headlines in a while that there would be a lot to talk about, but business has been kind of slow lately. There hasn't been really too many breakout things. Yeah, I did take a couple of notes, and one of them would be Harvey Weinstein has a hit out on him by a good fella. That good fella is Paul Sorvino. He has been quoted about his interaction with his daughter Mira Sorvino and how she was pretty much blacklisted from Hollywood due to her not taking on Weinstein's personal favors, if you will. So Paul Sorvino didn't really care for that too much and literally said he wants to kill him. Ew. Just like any good dad would, you know.
Yeah, so, that's the wrong person to get pissed off, too.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. You know, I don't blame the dude, and I don't think anybody's saying, oh, well, he shouldn't threaten him with violence. No, he should get his ass whooped.
Oh, yeah.
But
Harvey needs a lot of things bad to happen to him.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's coming, but... The next headline actually pertains to female actresses, but in a more positive note, as the top three grossing films of 2017 being Star Wars The Last Jedi, Beauty and the Beast, and Wonder Woman are all led by female-driven leads, and that's something that's never happened before. It's an unprecedented mark, and it speaks loudly for women, especially in the year of 2017, where it just seemed like from the middle of the year onward that everything was about, you know, sexual harassment and everything else. Just a lot of negative light being drawn to the surface by all these poor women who couldn't speak out and were trying to save face to save their careers. Just like this is such a terrible time in Hollywood. And it's good that it's being brought to light, because then it prevents scumbags like Weinstein to be doing what he's doing just because he feels like he has the power to do so. And seeing that being rewarded financially at the box office, which is one thing that Hollywood speaks, is finances. And the fact that all three top grossing films are all female lead movies, and it's just great for the cause. It proves that women are very strong as far as leading films and taking charge of the box office, and it's just such a great time for that. And you know, I think more movies are going to be coming up that are female led and you know Marvel is just dying to just get Captain Marvel out there. Oh, man. They're like, oh, you want a female-led film? Here you go. You know, yeah. This is what we got. And, man, you know they're going to knock it out of the park with that movie. And that's pretty exciting. And I guess my final headline, like I said, you know, just kind of a couple notes to cross, is that a film of ours that we all – well, not of ours personally, but of I wish – but a film that we all three really, really enjoyed by Netflix is Bright, and it is getting a sequel. Bright 2 has been greenlit, and nice. I'm still hoping out for that it's going to be called Brighter. And like you said, Brightest for the third. But I'm really happy. Although, I did read that writer Max Landis isn't coming back to write the script for Bright 2, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, Ayer's going to write it.
Yeah, because... That's kind of scary.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think that Max Landis was a perfect voice for Bright. He's kind of, I mean, because he wrote Chronicle. He was working on American Werewolf in London. You know, kind of the namesake of his father, and it's just he's got a really good. He's really in tune with that type of level of fantasy filmmaking, and I think that. Although I think he's kind of in trouble for some kind of harassment issue as well,
yeah.
Which is probably why he was removed from writing the sequel, but which is unfortunate because, you know, a young talent like that was only going to grow and cultivate, but now it seems like it's going to come to a crashing halt.
He grew too much in his pants.
Yeah, that's the problem, but he found his magic wand in the wrong spot.
He took too many blue pills.
Yeah. So, but we'll see.
That hurts me. Because everything is there to be so great. And it just... Oh.
And Airman, he's good at directing everything. Like, the direction is great. It's just that when he has to create and conjure a story is what's scary. Because I love that it's basically End of Watch meets Lord of the Rings, you know? And he's got the cop stuff down cold, no problem.
Oh, yeah. It's just
the fantasy element is what's scary, you know? I'm like, well, because he wrote Suicide Squad, too, you know?
And it's just like, yeah, that's scary.
But we'll see, you know, hopefully. And, oh, man, I hope Netflix isn't like, well, Bright 1 was so great, so here's the keys to the kingdom. Do whatever the hell you want to do. So, I don't know.
Here's another check, and this time we'll make it $100 million.
Yeah, we'll see how that works. How does that even happen? Like, I guess they base it. I mean, how do they recoup that financial?
I have no idea.
Because I mean, I know that Netflix gets a certain percentage of monetary income based on how many hits that the website gets. So if every user, which is over what, like 100 million or 10 million or something crazy mm-hmm. like that, watches the movie, it's basically like it's generating the equivalent of what, like $100 million domestically. I don't know how that works. I'm gonna look more into that, because if they're greenlighting a $100 million movie, then they're making money somehow.
It got 11 million views in like its first weekend, and somebody equated that to like a little over $100 million opening in the theater.
Well, yeah, I guess if you base it on the $11 million or 11 million views on account charges, like if someone's averaging like $10 an account, maybe that's what they're, I don't yeah. know. They're just, it's weird.
It's a weird equation.
But yeah, one movie that is definitely not like Bright is a little bit more dim, if you will, is our Indie Flick Fix for the week.
Ah, yes. And the Indie Flick Fix that inspired our main topic this week also. And you know what? Jeremy, I gave you props for this pick, and I'm still going to give you credit for this pick. So as your pick for the Indie Flick Fix, my man, go ahead and introduce us to this film.
All right. We have watched Brawl in Cell Block 99 from the director of Hell or High Water, I believe. Or,
no. Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah, Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah!
Yeah, and that one, Steven really liked that movie. I was kind of indifferent toward it, but this one, I really liked this one. It stars Vince Vaughn, and here's the rundown for it. A former boxer that loses his job that is fitting in society lands himself a job as a drug smuggler. Series of events land him in prison, and he is given an ultimatum to right his wrong decisions. All aspects of what he decides have their consequences. Only he can choose what he thinks is right or wrong and try to avenge his wrong choices. You never know what might be lurking in the next dark corner.
Hmm. Well. That is not at all the movie I watched.
It's an interesting perspective, yes.
Yeah. Well, kind of.
Kind of.
And if I could correct you, I loved Bone Tomahawk.
you have this gushy, rubbery one for Bone Tomahawk.
It seems like an oxymoron.
Okay, so we'll... let's go with first initial reactions. Again, guys, this is spoiler-free. Try to stay spoiler-free, please. But your first initial reactions when you were done with the movie. Jeremy, go first.
I was very impressed with it overall. It had kind of a slow start to it, and then when it picked up in the second and third acts, and then that third act, oh damn. And yeah, that made me really like it.
Cool. Steven?
I felt as a viewer, I was rewarded by the last half hour, maybe hour of the movie, because damn, does this movie demand your patience?
Yeah.
Because that first hour and a half is so damn slow. Ooh. That you may want to just stop it. But I urge you, don't. Just keep going. Just get to the end, and you will be rewarded for your viewership. Because, man, does it end in such a bang. And no,
literally.
But no spoilers, of course. But man, it's just it was a great movie. And of course, like we all said, I was there because of Bone Tomahawk. S. Craig Zoller, when I saw Bone Tomahawk, I loved it. And the violence in that movie is just so gory and just off-putting, how shockingly gory it is, that I thought, well, it's the Old West. You know, they dealt with savages back in the Old West. Cowboys and Indians were all brutal, and violence erupted every which way, so that's just part of the norm there. So I thought, well, this movie may not be as violent as Bone Tomahawk. I was wrong! It was every bit as much as violent, not more so. And I like that stuff. Like, I don't know who his special effects artist is, but they need a raise for their makeup, because some of that stuff looks so damn real to me. Like bones.
And with probably a budget that wasn't huge.
No. Yeah, it's not expensive. I think Vince Vaughn's salary probably cost more than the production of the movie itself. And I just, like I said, if you're starting it and you feel very bored and a little bit restless and anticipating something to happen right away, it's not going to. But it does once he gets to that prison. Once he gets to prison, that's it, man. It is just pretty much nonstop. And it's a great movie.
Cool. And let's see. Just like y'all, I was, like, the whole first half of this movie, like Steven said, it was slow moving. I mean, so slow moving that I think even Vince Vaughn walks a lot slower in the first half of this movie, because he's just, like, he plays, you know, it's a more serious role for Vince Vaughn, but he still has a very sarcastic tone that you're used to from him. Like, he still makes some jokes and stuff, but it's like he's a sarcastic smartass. And it's really fun to watch him in a serious role like this. I was asking Steven if there's ever been another role that he's played serious like this, and what'd you tell me, a True Detective?
Yeah, I think in True Detective, season 2, the season that he stars in, he plays one of the central villains of the season. And I think that what he's trying to go for here is what he's trying to attempt there. But it's just not there. Here, in Cell Block 99, it's definitely there. And I did like what you said about him being sarcastic and this and that, but it's not like a typical Vince Vaughn quippy Wedding Crashers type of sarcastic. He's still a pretty hardcore dude, and he just happens to be like a smartass, like you said, and he'll say something and pisses someone off, and then they get in his face, and then he breaks their face. It's just pretty simple formula here.
Dude, and he, like, the big tattoo on his head.
Oh, dude.
Oh, that just adds another element to this character that Vince Vaughn played in this movie. And it's just like, good Lord, Vince Vaughn's tatted up like a freaking Nazi-esque person. And it's just like, I don't see him that way, because, you know, most of the things you see him in is comedy and stuff like that. But it was so great. It was so good to see him something else.
I do also want to say something about Jennifer Carpenter's performance, who plays his wife. And for anybody who's seen Dexter or is fans of The Exorcism of Emily Rose or Quarantine, you know who Jennifer Carpenter is. And, you know, she plays a role at first that you kind of think isn't going to go anywhere. And, you know, she's the unfaithful wife. And then when he goes to prison, you think, well, and they rekindle their romance or whatever, and she becomes pregnant. And you kind of think that that's really it for her, but then they utilize her character to some pretty good potential there in the last.
Yeah.
Although I will say, she looks really bad, man. Like, physically, she just looked really skeletal and just scary. And Deb Morgan was already thin.
She looked like she was on drugs that he was slaying.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, I think she got into his stash, man.
Yeah, they should have weighed that properly. It might have been light.
Yeah, a little few grams light, because I think, man, she just looked terrible. But from an acting perspective, I thought she did really well, too.
Yeah. Yeah, she did good. And I think there's a part in the movie to where... Oh, I can't. I'm not going to give spoilers. Damn it. But it's so weird, and I just want to tell everybody about it.
Well, what is it? What is it kind of preluding to? Because maybe I can figure out where you're going.
Well, just the whole part of where what they're about to do with the baby. The Asian
guy. Oh, yeah, that.
Yeah, that's that was pretty crazy, man. I was like, oh, God, it's like Mother all over again.
except this time it was going to be even worse.
Yeah. Oh, dude, just the way they, like, in the back of my head, I'm like, okay, I know this is fake, and I know it's a movie, but who the hell comes up with this shit?
S. Craig Zoller. He's a sick bastard.
S. Craig Zoller, that guy.
My gosh, because I would never in a million years to think of, oh, let's torture somebody like this.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy.
So,
and Don Johnson's even showing up as the warden of Cell Block 90. Like,
I know.
Where the hell did Don Johnson show up?
He came from Miami.
Yeah, exactly.
He just stumbled on set and was like, I want to play.
Crockett wears Tubbs. Nice. But yeah, I mean, overall, I really enjoyed it.
Cool. All right, so final ratings. And, oh, before we go to final rate, Jeremy, good sir, what is your gore score for this movie?
I give it a 4 and a 4-star rating, too.
I bet.
Okay. And, I mean, since you went ahead and jumped ahead of me, so your rating is a 4-star, and yeah. Would you recommend this movie to other people?
Yes, I would say go watch it. Power through the first hour or so of it. Get through it, because it's got the most wonderful payoff at the very end. You will... like to see.
All right, Steven, final rating and recommendation.
If it didn't get buoyed down by that first hour, I probably would have gone with a 4, but I'll go with 3.5, just because they could have trimmed some of that stuff out in the editing room. Like, you could have trimmed a lot of that out. It didn't necessarily all have to be in there, but I'll give it a 3.5. And much like Jeremy said, just get through it. You get to A to Z, you'll be pretty fulfilled as a viewer.
Cool. I think I'm along the lines with you, with a 3.5. Like you said, the first hour of the movie could have slimmed down, definitely. There's some things that, of course, you needed in there, but most of it you could have done without. Definitely... do not let your kids watch this movie. And
okay, yeah. Chappie.
Shut up. That's in the past. I learned my lesson. But, yeah, if you are not squeamish, go ahead and give this a watch. Because if you don't like a lot of gore, sorry. This just may not be the movie for you. So, all right. So that wraps up our Indie Flick Fix. Guys, you know, I know we said we've been picking some indie movies and stuff. And this was Jeremy's... I'm still saying it's Jeremy's pick or whatever. But hey, if there's an indie film out there that you'd like us to watch... Shoot us a message on social media or email us screenaddictspodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to get as many indie films done as possible. We know there's a ton out there, and there's maybe some that we haven't heard of. Like I said, if you have any recommendations for an indie film, shoot them over to us. Yeah, either on our social media or on our email. Gmail account. But as for that is over, and now we head into the main topic of the movie podcast. But inspired by our Indie Flick Fix, we are doing our favorite top three prison movies. And let me clear it up a little bit, because I was a little confused when we came up with this. As long as the movie is somewhat taking place in prison, it's okay. It doesn't have to be mainly a prison movie, right?
I think when you run into a limited amount of a certain film, that some exceptions need to be made. Yeah.
Well, there was a lot more than I thought, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's quite a few.
So, but we will move on. And, as always, our first leg, our starter, our number one guy, Jeremy, what's your number three, man?
All right, my number three, it's more recent. I'm going with the movie from 2013 starring Sylvester Stallone, Escape Plan. And it has Arnold Schwarzenegger. And Stallone's playing a character that is way smarter than what he himself really is. But you just got to go with it. And he's this supposed genius that willfully goes to prison and finds the weaknesses in prisons and breaks out of them expertly and Bond-like almost. And anyway, he teams up with Schwarzenegger and, yeah, some fun breaks loose and they come up with an escape plan in the prison they're in.
You have heard of lockup, right?
Yeah.
Just say.
I like the escape plan. It was fun.
Hell, you could have said Demolition Man, because he was in a cryogenic prison, for crying out loud.
True story.
At the very beginning.
Escape plan.
I like
you know, I will say,
plan.
Though, that movie, it wasn't really that bad either. I thought it was fine. It wasn't, like, great, but it could have been worse. That's for damn sure.
And you had Fitty in it.
Yeah, I mean, what makes a movie but Fitty Cent?
That's right.
Lock up. Come on.
Man, quit hating on this man's pick. I love that movie.
I know, Dick. Chris is just like, I'm just glad somebody else is getting picked on.
That's right.
I mean, it's from the director of 1408.
Mikhail, what was his name? Mikhail Hofstrom, or Mikhail Solomon, or something like that.
Mikhail like Hofstrom. Swedish,
yeah, he's like a Swedish director. Perfect. Wasn't that movie on the shelf for a really long time or something like that, and they were just waiting?
Yeah, I think Stallone was having a hard time getting it made and then finally got it made.
God, you remember in the 90s during their heyday when Stallone and Schwarzenegger barely even referenced each other? Like, they did not want to be brought up in the same sentence. And they seemed to be pretty friendly. Like, they owned Planet Hollywood together. You would see little, like in Last Action Hero, it's Stallone that's in Terminator 2. Just little jokes like that. But, man, and even in Demolition Man, they had the Schwarzenegger Library because it was named after the famous president, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
But they would never do a movie together. Like, people were begging for them to do a movie together, and they just refused to do it. And I don't know why so much, but could you imagine a movie with Schwarzenegger and Stallone in their heyday, like in the 90s? Holy shit, man. That would have been something. Matter of fact, I think Tango and Cash was written for Stallone and Schwarzenegger, but Schwarzenegger didn't want to do it, and then they casted Kurt Russell. That's what it was. I knew there was something, some kind of like film folklore there. Mm.
Always,
but yeah, then there's Escape Plan.
That was a great movie. Better than
Lock Tango Up 2! Better than what?
Tango and Cash.
I'm gonna forever I'm gonna forever call Escape Plan Lock Up 2.
Jeremy, I like your pick. Don't listen to this fool. Alright, so my number three, I'm going with 2006's The Gridiron Gang, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson and X to the Z Exhibit.
Steven, you better give him all kinds of shit for this.
Hey, if you don't beat me to it. I will say, though, that it's really not a bad movie. It's pretty good.
And I know it's not really prison, but still juvenile detention is just as bad, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's
okay. Has anybody been? Has any of you, either of you, ever been to juvie?
Yes, I have, Jeremy.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Do you not remember what happened to me in eighth grade, buddy? Obviously not.
He should dog, that was a long time ago.
He don't remember what happened to him in eighth grade.
1997 was a long time ago.
Anyway, I was in juvie for like a week, and they never let me play football. They only let us play volleyball one time.
You didn't serve the ball into your face like you did that one time, did you?
And I was terrified because people was looking at my shoes like they wanted to steal my shoes.
Well, what did you do, Chris? You got to tell everybody.
Were you wearing expensive shoes in juvie?
Well, dude, they're the only shoes I had.
Yeah, well, you should have went shoeless.
They were the
got them Scottie Pippins.
They were the Scottie Pippins.
I knew it. Dude, we could have a whole episode on how awesome the basketball shoes of our middle school year was. Dude,
I think we had a whole text message thread for about 3 weeks about the shoes that we owned.
You're right, and we were just posting pics of like our favorite shoes, our basketball shoes.
Anyway,
what did you do, Chris, to get into your own little gridiron gang?
My own gridiron volleyball gang. We were called the Hardwood Gang, you know. this was pre-Columbine, thank God. But for some reason...
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
This now.
they had found a pistol in my locker, which was not mine. I'm not going to get into details.
Yeah. I hate when those phantom guns just hop into your locker.
It just happenstance to be there. Shit happens.
He's still pleading the fifth.
I am. Anyway, well, possession is 9/10 of the law, so I went down.
Yeah, that happens too.
That was the most terrifying week of my life.
You should have served hard time like Cool Hand Luke.
And ate them raw eggs. Or hard-boiled eggs.
But, you know, let's get back to the movie, man. Come on.
All right. Dang, Chris's prison drama is a hell of a lot more interesting than our picks. But, yeah, we probably should move on.
But, yeah, that's my number three pick. Gridiron Gang. You know, at the end, everybody was great, and the 12-year-old, 13-year-old boy had a kid. It was good times.
They were family-ish.
They were family. That's all he wanted was to see his baby. I mean, come on.
You remember when that one dude on the team, that big, the biggest, toughest, strongest dude on the team, he's kind of like the one everybody looks to, and he gets knocked out with a concussion and doesn't even play for the rest of the movie, and I thought... Wow, he's some leader, you know. I thought that was funny.
Well, and that goes back to my high school.
Yeah, and all your man, this movie was deeply personal to you. I had no idea.
See? Touch me on the inside, you fuckers. And y'all make fun of my movie.
Well, that was a very graphic.
Let's move on. Pissing me off.
He wants to be touched on the inside.
By a porg.
By a porg.
I think Jerry took care of all of them.
Steven, what is your number three? God.
Well, my number three pick, I actually agreed that Gridiron Gang in the detention center was a valid pick, because my number three pick also takes place in a detention center, and it is the 1996 drama Sleepers, where the first half of the movie, of that like almost 3 hour movie, takes place at the young juvenile detention facility that these four boys from Hell's Kitchen end up having to go to due to a prank that went tragically wrong and left a man dead. So they went to this detention center and they're all taking turns getting beaten and molested by Kevin Bacon and the rest of the guards there. So for the whole, you know, first half of the movie, they're just trying to survive in this detention center and the abusive and, I mean, very abusive guards. And it shows them as they grow up, and their grown-up counterparts are played by Brad Pitt and Jason Patrick, and they're just all taking different paths with their lives, and some of them are hardcore criminals, and the other one's a lawyer, Brad Pitt's a lawyer, and it just, they're trying to get back at all the guards that ruined their lives when they were children, and it's a really sad movie, and you know, the justice system in that situation, because it's set in the 60s when they're younger, or maybe it's the 70s, I don't really remember, but overall, great prison drama, Sleepers.
Cool. Alright, now on to number two, and I will start this party off, and my number two pick for favorite prison movie is going to be 1997's Con Air.
Yes!
Yeah! Simon West.
That's the name you drop when you think of Con Air, the director?
Yes.
That Danny Trejo, bro.
In Crazy Nick Cage.
And what's funny is, like, he was the most sane one in that.
I know. That was, like, his most straight role of the 90s. He did.
Yeah. Cyrus the Virus, bro. Mm. Yeah. I wish I had a cool nickname tough. Like the Virus. Or maybe not.
Or, like, Soap Dropper, like Jerry.
Or Pinball.
Well, you had Atomic Brown.
Dude, I just noticed this. Nick Cage's wife in this movie?
Monica Potter?
Yeah. She's the Parenthood lady.
Yeah, Christina. Yeah. That's right.
Dang.
And Patch Adams' chick that died. Uh-huh. I mean, spoilers for Patch Adams.
Yeah.
Well, that's really cool. I didn't put that together till just now.
Oh, man, that cast is... It goes in deep, man.
Oh, you dude.
Con Air has... Steve Buscemi, John Cusack, Danny Trejo.
Yeah, Machete, Johnny 23.
Isn't that your uncle's?
Yeah, no, I was about to ask you the same question.
Emilio Riviera? I like that dude. Anyway.
From Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, I didn't know he was. Oh, yeah, he's one of the prisoners. I forgot. He's
Carlos.
He looks like my dad.
That is true.
He really does.
So that could make Danny Trejo your grandpa for real. Anyway, if you haven't seen Con Air, they're on a plane, a bunch of cons, and they're in the air.
Yeah, well said.
And the cons take over the prison plane.
That's right. And Cyrus the Virus is the man.
Well, of course he is.
When you have a cool nickname like the Virus, you have to be the leader.
I mean, you can't be like poor Pinball and get caught under the landing wheel or whatever.
That's a shame. I liked old Pinball.
I like Pinball.
So, okay, at the end of this movie,
Speaking of Dave Chappelle, there was
his... Right.
Dave Chappelle.
There's his tie back.
Okay, so... And I'm trying to remember. The end of the movie where Buscemi sitting at the table with the little girl.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't ever tell us what happened to that. Are we just supposed to draw our own conclusion, obviously, but...
He doesn't kill her.
Yeah, the plane flies over her neighborhood, and she's running out waving goodbye.
Yeah, she's waving goodbye to the plane.
I don't remember that.
Sleep soundly, Chris. It was okay.
Yeah, he didn't kill her.
But how crazy would it have been if he did?
If he was wearing her head as a hat?
Yeah. What if him running?
It's like Leatherface. Well, I'm glad we were able to solve a 20-year mystery for you, Chris, but the girl survived.
Damn it.
Simon West wasn't that morbid in the late 90s.
Yeah. He's like, I'm removing it from my list.
It's done. Yeah.
I love that movie.
How do I? Oh my god.
And Steven, what is your number two pick?
My number two pick is a little bit more sophisticated of a prison drama, and it is from the short story written by Stephen King. It is the 1999 Tom Hanks film The Green Mile. Green Mile is a supernatural prison fantasy that stars Tom Hanks and Michael Clark Duncan as John Coffey, a prisoner wrongfully accused of a murder who has these supernatural abilities to heal and do other wonderful things. And he's pretty much just guarding him. He's a massive man beast. He's a giant man. And it just kind of shows the... certain ward of the prison known as the Green Mile, because it's where all of the prisoners being sent to the electric chair, pretty much their last holding cells before going on and walking down the Green Mile to their inevitable deaths. And it's such a great story. It's one of those 3-hour movies that doesn't feel like 3 hours. I could sit and watch the whole damn thing without a problem. And got the Blu-ray of it not too long ago. It looks great. Still holds up. It's just a great movie, written and directed by Frank Darabont, who we may talk about again by the end of this show. And this is such a great movie, The Green Mile. Walking the mile.
I'm going to sleep.
I know, right?
Dude, so long. I know you say you can make it through all 3 hours without thinking about it, but I can honestly say, I don't know if I've stayed awake through that whole movie one time.
I mean, it does have some dragging parts for damn sure.
Yeah, a lot of that could have been cut out. I mean, 3 hours, really?
But hell, Darabont got to tell his story, and he had a long-ass story to tell.
He also got to tell his majestic story, too, and look what happened there.
Oh, that one was way too long. And you know, the Majestic really isn't that long of a movie.
No, it just seemed like it was.
I know.
But I love The Green Mile. It's just... Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. So and good. Percy... played by Doug Hutchinson, is just one of the most... Oh, God. He's one character that I wish I could just beat the shit out of, man. He's just so horrible.
Or just strap his ass to that electric chair and turn it on.
Plug in the juice.
You know, there is few and far between characters that can actually make you feel that much hatred towards him. I mean, knowing that it's a movie, knowing that it's just... But, dude, like... Yeah. I want to kill that guy. I know he's not even real, but I want to kill him. Anyway.
Do it for Mr. Jangles.
Mr. Jangles.
All right, Jeremy, what's your number two, my friend?
Number two, I'm going all the way back to 1979, the Clint Eastwood classic Escape from Alcatraz. With he's reunited with his Dirty Harry director, Donald Siegel. And pretty much he's an escape artist that gets sent to Alcatraz, and he has to try to bust out of Alcatraz. Doesn't really have an all-star cast in it besides Eastwood. Fred Ward's in it. Our classic,
a very young
Fred Ward, our classic Tremors buddy,
Remo Williams.
But yeah, it's just a fun little bust out of Alcatraz movie.
Cool.
You know what that movie kind of reminded me of was. I think it actually came out around the same time, was Papillon with Steve McQueen and Dustin Hoffman, where they're on a prison island as well, and they're planning to escape. I don't know why I thought about that. It just old, you know.
Prison. Yeah, that old war movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Number ones. Do we want to share our collective pick?
Make that last. That has to be last. Okay. Yeah, that has to be the last
one. You got to end the show with that one.
All right, so Steven, number ones, start it off.
I'm glad you started with me because mine is probably the most bullshit number one that I've ever given. But I cannot help it. I don't care. I love it. It's... At least with your Con Air pick, they are technically in Con Air, you know, but my number one pick is The Rock. And I just,
I'm all for that. Go with it.
I'm glad I'm getting support here because I love that movie. It's one of the best action movies ever freaking made.
It's fucking awesome.
It's held on the most notorious prison in American history, Alcatraz Island. These Marines take it over. They imprison tourists, so technically there are prisoners still on the island, and they're holding the entire San Francisco Bay Area hostage. And Nicolas Cage, who in Con Air is a real badass, in this he is not.
No,
I love The Rock, man. I love it. I know it's a little play on the whole prison theme, but I figured since a movie based on an actual prison with its backdrop kind of serves. Plus, The Rock is just great.
And you got Sean Connery. Can't go wrong with Sean Connery.
Godspeed. Oh, so good, man. I love that movie.
Cool. That was Michael Bay before he...
became Michael Bay.
Before he became the known Michael Bay he is now.
He outbayed himself.
All right. Let's go. Jeremy, number one, man.
Number one. All right. I'm going 2002 and the Kevin Reynolds classic, The Count of Monte Cristo. Mm-hmm. And... if anybody doesn't know this story, it's the Alexander Dumas, or as someone in Shawshank would say, dumbass. And yeah, pretty much it's based on that story. Gets sent to prison falsely by your best friend. Escape from prison many years later, find your best friend, make his life a living hell, and then kill him. That's pretty much what it is.
Y'all get ready, because I'm about to do that shit to y'all.
I figured. Mm-hmm. So is this The Count of Monte Cristo or The Longest Yard? I can't tell. Sometimes I forget. But yeah, that's a great movie. And yeah. Especially the Kevin Reynolds version. It's a really, really good movie. And all that stuff. And of course he learned so much when Dumbledore is his freaking teacher.
Of course.
Who couldn't pick a better soulmate?
And then you got Guy Pearce being the classic bad guy.
Man, he's so good at that. That's sleazy asshole. Man, Guy Pearce. That's he was born to play that part.
Oh yeah.
All right. So, we'll go on to my number one because it's just time. But mine's kind of a sketchy number one pick too. Because not the whole movie's about prison or being in prison, but a big part of it is in prison. And it's 1993's Blood In, Blood Out. And it gives us one of the baddest ass prison gangs ever, La Honda.
La Honda.
And you know, it's Miklo and Paco and dude, it's just so. I could watch this movie over and over and over and over again. It's so
good. It's a good one.
And I love Benjamin Bratt in it. He's really good. He's really young. We're just getting so old.
Yeah,
like, we're saying all these guys are they're really young, and they're actually like not that old. I don't know.
They were young at the time.
I do remember though, like when this movie came out, I wasn't allowed to watch this movie until like 5 years after it came out. I was told. I was too young for this movie. And now I look back on it and I'm like, good call, Mom. Good call. Because I would have joined a gang.
Would have stored all the ammunition in your school locker, huh?
Obviously. See, it comes full circle, buddy.
That's where the arsenal is.
He's like the guy in Boondock Saints who opens up that closet. It's just a wall of guns. It's like Chris's middle school locker.
This was such a great topic this week.
Man, the skeletons are falling out of Chris's closet.
I'm glad I got
literally because he put them there.
He had some hanging there from 15 years ago.
I'm glad I got to share my life with our listeners tonight. it's been a pleasure rehashing all this old shit.
We got Bone Thugs and Harmony on this episode.
Steven being the Harmony.
Of course.
And Jeremy's
the Bone.
I'm the Bone.
Gosh.
Because we play it to the bone.
Hey, that ties back to Woody Harrelson.
I know.
And our indie flip. Bone Tomahawk.
Close enough.
Close enough.
Yeah. Anyways, but we do have a shared pick because we all would have picked this movie in our list. Although Steven probably would have fought us if we tried to take it away from him.
Steven and me would have been in a Jeremy drop down, drag out, bloodbath. It would have been
a brawl in podcast 99.
So why don't you two go ahead and introduce our our collective pick for this topic?
I mean, it's not only our collective pick. I'm pretty sure it's everybody's pick.
Yeah.
Just because it's just, not only is it not only is it the best prison movies ever made, it's just one of the best movies ever made, period. And that would be 1994's The Shawshank Redemption. Like you said, nobody was going to pick that. It's just everybody's favorite. It's a phenomenal film. I settled with The Green Mile, so I was like, well, I'll take that, I guess. But it's just one of the best movies ever made. A to Z, acting, most satisfying endings in cinematic history. Just a perfect movie. And you want to talk about something that, like, Jeremy, weren't you just randomly watching it when it was on TV the other day and couldn't stop? I mean, it's just one of those movies.
Yeah, it's just when it comes on TV, it, no matter what part of the movie it's in, you just sit there and watch it. It doesn't matter. It has that appeal.
It has one of my all-time favorite scenes in movies, too, when they're all just sitting there on the rooftop having those beers after they were tarring the rooftop. And,
oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. It's just so perfect. I love it. Love it.
Hey, it still pisses me off to this day that it didn't win Best Picture that year.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very controversial subject, considering that 94, you saw Forrest Gump winning, but also nominated was Shawshank and Pulp Fiction. So it's just a very...
Yeah.
And then Forrest Gump went... I mean, no offense. I love Forrest Gump. I watch that all the time. But come on. Come on.
And yeah, and Pulp Fiction probably should have won over Forrest Gump, too.
That's what I'm saying.
You got two that should have won over Forrest Gump, and really... Shawshank, I don't know if you could give it over Pulp Fiction, because Pulp Fiction's just so damn good. It's, yeah, I don't know.
That Oscar ballot, you never know what you're going to get.
I mean, Tarantino won it for writing, so they should have gave him picture, too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it's just one of those things, and what a tough year to even vote. But in hindsight... Shawshank was a failure at the box office.
Oh, yeah.
It flopped. It only resurged due to video cassette sales and rentals, and people were watching and thinking, oh, my God, this is a fantastic movie. Let's, you know, tell our friends. So it grew more on videotape rentals than it did in the theaters. And by this point, it's already the word spread that it's one of the best movies ever made.
It's kind of like the Fight Club effect. It flopped hard at the box office, and then over a period of years, it became this cult phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
You know what?
Yeah, I mean, I still buy every copy of Fight Club that they release.
You know what other movie's about to do that?
Oh, God, what?
Justice League.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I hope so.
It maybe. We'll see.
Anyways. Oh, man. All right. Well, that brings us to an end tonight for our first show of 2018. And we went to prison on y'all. So that was fun.
Wait. What about Ernest Goes to Jail?
Oh, my God.
I changed my number one.
All right. So, guys, before we close out, any last words, Steven?
No, I mean, like I said, Happy New Year. I'm even more afraid of you after this podcast than ever before, Chris. So, congratulations.
And remember this, buddy. I live closer to your mom than you do.
It's so unnecessary. So scary.
All right, Jeremy.
Oh, nothing really. Just a happy new year to everyone. And hope everyone partied safely and made it back to work this week. And yeah.
Cool.
That's about all I got.
All right, guys. Well, like I said before, thanks for joining us on our first episode of 2018. Look forward to our best of 2017 show coming up, and then probably we will be doing most anticipated for 2018. I know there's some stuff out there that Jeremy's eager to get here. Some Marvel crap, but whatever. But we got a lot of stuff coming that we have planned. So it's going to be some good times. But just like the other two guys, thank you for joining us all of 2017. Happy New Year. And guys, since you're here already, go ahead and hit that subscribe button wherever you are. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, pretty much anywhere you can find a podcast. You can follow us on our social medias on Instagram and Facebook. We're at the Screen Addicts Podcast. On Twitter, we are Screen_Addicts, and Addicts is spelled ADDICS. You can follow us all on there. We are also proud members of the Indie Popcorn Podcast Network. I always get tongue twisted with that. But guys, the bunch of awesome shows on that network. If you want to search them, you can go find them on Twitter at IndiePopcorn_FM. And you can find the list of shows that are on that network. I just found out there is a fellow Texan podcast on our network also. So we may be having to collaborate with them pretty soon. I think their show is called F is for Film. So we'll see what we can do with them guys.
Interesting.
Yeah. And they're actually from Dallas, so they're not too far.
Oh, cool.
From where we're at, Jerome.
Oh, but, more Cowboy fans for you.
Oh, damn it. Never mind.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Anyways, guys, well, that'll do it for us tonight. So, as for me, good night.
Adios, amigos.
Porg out.
Thank you for listening to the Screen Addicts Podcast. Subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play,